We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mike Chen, let's talk some baseball. Glad that you're hanging out. Hope you enjoyed the last hour. Man, that was very football heavy in hour one of the show. Hour two is going to be a little bit more baseball heavy. And in fact, the rest of the show is. I do have some final thoughts. Well, not final thoughts, but continued thoughts on the Roquan Smith thing. And it's what I was saying to Patrick Finley that I don't think, to me, I've been contacted by a couple of people like, should I be worried? Should I be worried? I'm a Bears fan. Should I be worried? And I say, no, you shouldn't be worried. Just because there's an extra week of training camp and that a lot of the stuff that happens in training camp doesn't matter. The one concern that I would have is not a guy falling behind in learning. It's everything is not football. You can go work out at the gym all you want. You can run all you want. You can do agility drills all you want. It's different when you are getting readying yourself to hit and be hit, but there's still plenty of time for that to happen with Roquan Smith. The other thing I always worry about, and his linebacker mate is going through this right now, hamstring, muscle pulls, like that sort of thing when a guy gets back. But again, there's more than a month to get ready for the game against the Packers, which is the game that matters. I do think that it's interesting that the NFL, that I believe in that this could be the canary in the coal mine. That this, along with the Joey Bosa stuff, that you're going to have agents who are going to be looking for offset language in contracts and saying, take that out. Take all of that stuff out. And the stuff that Dan Graziano did in his piece was kind of explained that it isn't just as nice and as neat as Roquan's worried about getting suspended because of hits, and he wants to make sure that there are protections in place to not void his deal. It goes a little bit deeper than that. Let me just share the story. It's from Dan Graziano, who writes for ESPN.com. If the Chicago Bears were looking for a negotiating trick that would save face for them and their first-round rookie, they came up with a doozy. The Bears are in a contract dispute with the number 8 overall pick, Roquan Smith, a linebacker out of Georgia who has missed almost 2 weeks of training camp because he and the team haven't agreed to contract terms. A team in this situation finds itself in a bind, wanting the player in camp but not wanting to do or say anything publicly that makes the player a villain in the eyes of the fans before he even plays a game for them. For that reason, the team, asterisk, always swallows hard and refuses public comment. The asterisk relates to the Chargers went hard the other way 2 years ago with Joey Bosa once camp was ending and he still wasn't there. The Bears might have found a way around it. Over the weekend, Coach Matt Nagy let slip at a news conference that the league's new helmet rule, the one that could subject players to ejection for initiating contact with the crown of the helmet, was part of the reason for the holdup. Subsequent reporting indicates the Bears and Smith's representatives are indeed arguing over contract language that would allow the team to void guaranteed money if Smith were to be disciplined by the league under the new rule. Please understand this. Even if you take Nagy at his word and the new helmet rule is part of the issue, the problem isn't that the Bears were worried about Smith getting ejected or suspended for new illegal hits. The problem is that the Bears want to reserve the right to void his guarantees if he gets ejected or suspended for illegal hits. That's a critical difference. and it isn't the only approach available to them. The Bears, if they're truly worried about this new rule and its impact on linebacker play, could say to Smith, quote, "This is going to be a tough one for guys coming into the league at your position, but we're going to work with you on this and teach you the rules best we can and try to put you in a position to avoid the problem. And if you end up getting ejected or suspended for an illegal hit, we'll stand by you and keep working at it." Close quote. Instead, they're saying, quote, "If you get ejected or suspended for an illegal hit, we want to be able to take your money back." That's an important thing to understand. And I think maybe some of the scariest stuff from this Graziano piece is stuff that he said about Leonard Floyd and about Mitchell Trubisky's contract. He writes, "A review of recent Bears first-round contracts finds that 2016 first-round pick Leonard Floyd and 2017 first-round pick Mitchell Trubisky can have their guarantees voided if the player in question engages in conduct reasonably judged by the club to adversely affect or reflect on the club or make any public comment to the media that club determines in its sole discretion, one, breaches a material obligation of loyalty to the club and or, two, materially undermines the public's respect for or its criticizing of club, players, teammates, club's ownership, club's coaches, club management, any of the club's operations or policies, or the NFL. Even after seven paragraphs of specifics, the default section of each of these deals includes a subsection H that says the player is in default if he is suspended by the NFL for any reason not otherwise specified above." So that's what Roquan Smith, his agent, is fighting against. And honestly, if I had an agent, I want him fighting against that too. This is real. If Graziano's reporting is accurate, if he saw Trubisky and Floyd's contract and it has these clauses in it, those are terrible clauses. And if I were Mitch Trubisky, for sure, I wouldn't have signed it. Now, I'm sure those guys are like, "I'm never going to do anything. My conduct is never going to be to the level of detriment." I understand that, and you want to get in, and you're a quarterback. But if you're a quarterback, you got them by the you-know-whats. And especially when you trade picks to get a guy, you got them by the you-know-whats. So make sure that language is right. I'm not angry at Roquan Smith at all. And it's not like I've seen Bears fans on Twitter or whatever being mad. I'm not trying to create a straw man here. I'm just saying that for me, overall, I'm not worried. And if this is the language that the Bears are putting in their contract, and who knows, it might be boilerplate around the league. If I were in a position to do it, there are so many times in the NFL where you are not in position of power in negotiations that whenever you do get some power, you need to exert it. And this is Roquan Smith doing that. And I got no problem with it because of the sport. It's a poof and it's over. I think that he's getting excellent advice. And I hope that he gets that clause taken out of the contract. That's what I hope. And then he, you know, gets to camp, gets ready, and performs the way the Bears think that he can perform. Up to Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Vince. Hey, Vince, you're on the score.
I would say that a couple of points. One, can the Bears pay him more and have money come out if he violates those things so they don't, A, set a precedent, but, B, guarantee the money he's looking for? And as far as blaming Roquan Smith, I don't blame him in the least either. I also don't blame the team. You know, they have a right to pay what they want to pay, and he has a right to sell his labor for what he wants to. And if those two things don't meet, they don't meet. If they do, they do. It's pretty simple economics.
Well, it's not, though, Vince, because I know people try to bring this up too, but it's not really, because it's not like Roquan Smith. It was not free market, correct?
Well, no, I think it is free market. He owns his own labor. He can sell it for
No, but Vince, it's not free market. You know why?
Okay.
Because Roquan Smith couldn't choose where he went to work.
Oh, he can't choose where he went to work if he wants to go into the draft. But that's he still has a right to take his labor anywhere he wants to.
Okay. It's the NFL draft.
I keep on telling people that never compare your job or anybody, a layperson's job, to a sports person's job. They're totally different.
It is. It's a lot different. And people have been throwing the concept of free market economics around with this. And the fact that you have someone who gets drafted by a team, I think, mitigates some of that. Not all of it. I mean, there are still elements that are definitely free market, but not after you get drafted. This segment being brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. And this hour is being brought to you by the Illinois Media School, IMS. Herbie. IMS. Mike Ching, you're an IMS guy, too?
That is correct. I graduated from there 2 years ago.
I'm going to have to tell them to step it up. I need better producers. I'm only getting guys from IMS? That's ridiculous. But, yes, we thank IMS for their hard work and getting preparing. A lot of IMS guys here at the score, which is good. They do good work, just like Mike Chen. All right, let's talk a little baseball. Let's talk about last night's game. But wait, before I talk about last night's game, I would like to say this about Alex Rodriguez. I'm pretty sure that Baseball Nation had fallen back in love with Alex Rodriguez. Oh my God, he's done a tremendous job of rebranding himself and turning himself into a credible color commentator on this show. We played a cut of Alex Rodriguez talking hitting with Javier Baez, and it was phenomenal. It's really good. For what it's worth, I think that he and Jessica Mendoza add something to the broadcast that we don't ordinarily see. I think both Alex and Jessica do a fantastic job of working the clubhouse. Jessica usually has notes of, hey, I talked with Kyle Hendricks about his changeup. This is what he said is really important about throwing a changeup. Alex Rodriguez kind of gets the lay of the land. He can do whatever he wants because he's Alex Rodriguez. How many times have you seen Alex Rodriguez walking the field with a player doing a produce piece? How many times have you seen Alex Rodriguez really breaking down with information that he's got from the clubhouse? So far, you've seen that at least once a week on Sunday Night Baseball. The reason that I tell you that is because it'll be very easy for anyone who doesn't like what Alex Rodriguez said about Yu Darvish to then say Alex Rodriguez isn't in our clubhouse. He doesn't know. He doesn't know anything about this. He should mind his own, stay out of White Sox business. But just remember that the access that a network gets for a nationally televised game is different than anything else. When it comes to football, if the Bears are playing on Sunday night or Monday night, the amount of access that those broadcasters, those partners, those rights holders, let's be really specific, those rights holders have is different than, for example, me covering a game. I have a lot of rules that are placed on me, where I can be, how much I can look at, what areas of practice I can talk about. Whereas, if you're Chris Collinsworth, coaches will diagram you plays. They will tell you what they're planning on doing. Now, he doesn't reveal it until the broadcast is on so that you don't give anything away. I understand it's proprietary. stuff. I get that. But I'm just letting you know that it's easy to say Alex doesn't know what's going on inside the Cubs clubhouse when he has done multiple features on Cubs players for Sunday night games. Cubs have been on Sunday night baseball quite a bit this year. He sat down with Chris Bryant. He sat down with Javier Baez. Did he do one with Zobrist? I feel like there was something with Zobrist too, maybe, at some point. But Alex Rodriguez has had access to the Cubs clubhouse. No matter who tells you that he hasn't. I just want you to factor that in. Whatever you think about what he said about Darvish, I just want you to keep that in mind. That is, as Alex is being shouted down, the way to shout him down is to say that he doesn't have access. And I'm here to tell you that there is video proof that he's had access to the Cubs. And a lot of times what happens, and I don't know that's what happens in this case, but a lot of times what happens is when a national figure like that gets that amount of alone time with a player, they talk about other things. They aren't just talking about what's happening in front of the camera that's shooting them. There's usually an exchange of a phone number or an email. There's contact that goes beyond what you see on the television. I want you to put all of that in a pot and stir it up and then listen to what Alex Rodriguez said about Yu Darvish last night, courtesy of ESPN.
It's been a very sobering year with the debacle of the start of Yu Darvish, who's been devastating. I mean, a guy to start a six-year contract with three of the worst months you can ever see. I mean, I know he threw a 10-pitch bullpen, then a 16-pitch bullpen, and then he said his arm was hurting. And it's gotten so bad around. Now, they won't say this publicly, but it's gotten so bad. They let him basically police and take control of his own rehab, which is scary because they don't want to create anything that he can kind of push back against. So he'll let the team know when he's ready, which let me just tell you what that means to a clubhouse. You lose respect quickly. And my concern for him, because he's a great young talent, is it may take two or three or four years. You may never get that back. The other side of that is Chatwood, Tyler, who's actually struggled, but has gone out there. He's posted.
Puts his neck out there every start. No one he doesn't have his best stuff.
Exactly, Jess. And he gets beat down, but gets back up. He takes a punch and gets back up. And you'll never see players complain or whine about a guy like that. They actually back him. So this is an issue that if you're Cubs Nation, you have to watch the Yu Darvish development because it's not good inside that clubhouse right now.
Highlight courtesy of ESPN. Now, it'd be very easy, and there's some people who are already texting in with their thoughts on this. It'd be very easy to just totally dismiss Alex Rodriguez because Alex Rodriguez cheated the game. Alex Rodriguez missed an entire year. Alex Rodriguez was a guy that when he wasn't a clubhouse, people didn't like. But that all changed 6 months ago. Now he's J-Lo's boyfriend and America's guest. And people love his commentary on baseball until it burns them a little bit. I'm not telling you, because I don't have any proof. I'm not here to tell you that anyone on the Cubs told Alex Rodriguez that they don't like how this situation with Darvish is going. But would it be that crazy to think that someone might have said, yeah, this is not the best situation? Either we believe in Alex's bona fides as a major league player or we don't. Players talk. Players who are legendary get all sorts of things told to them by current players to curry favor. There are probably players in the Cubs clubhouse that grew up idolizing Alex Rodriguez, for good or for bad. So just keep that in mind. Also, how about this? How about we talk about human nature for a second? What's your reaction to Yu Darvish, Ben? I know what it is. I know the answer to this question because I see it every night. Every time that there's a Yu Darvish story, there's an eye roll. A literal and figurative eye roll. Again, I have no proof that what Alex Rodriguez said was true, but human nature tells us that there might be some merit to it. The Cubs push back on it hard, which is what they're supposed to do. The Cubs do have a history of letting guys rehab at the major league level. Kyle Schwarber was here with the team all the way up to the point where they said, you might be able to play in the World Series, go to Arizona and go get some at-bats, and then we'll see you in Cleveland. They have a long-standing, and I think one of the best organizations around when it comes to dealing with players and meeting players where they feel comfortable. This is the franchise that saw Tommy La Stella storm out and say, no, I am not taking a demotion. Y'all can kiss my ass. I will go and not play baseball at all. And the Cubs were like, oh, okay. How about this? How about you go home for a few days? And then we can talk about it. And he was like, I ain't going home. And they were like, no, just go home. Just go home. And then what did they do? They figured it out and they brought him back. So the Cubs have an excellent record in dealing with players, meeting players where players are comfortable. I think it's the hallmark of them being a top-notch organization. But I also think that it's possible that someone may have said to Alex Rodriguez, you know, this is not ideal, what's going on with Darvish. If you like to react, you want to talk about this, we can. 312-644-6767 is the number. My name is Lawrence Holmes. We're talking a little baseball, talking about A-Rod, and I'll let you hear what Darvish's agent had to say about the report from A-Rod. Next, here on The Score. Before I get back to the A-Rod stuff, this might interest you. It just crossed. ESPN Buster Olney reports that the Mets plan to contend in 2019, so they prefer to hold on to starters Jacob DeGrom, Noah Syndergaard, and Zach Wheeler. I feel like that should be written a little differently. I think that should be ESPN Buster Olney reports that the Mets say they plan on contending in... I guess it's fair to say they plan to contend in 2019, but it sounds weird saying it out loud. So it doesn't look like Jacob DeGrom is on the move, at least for now. I mean, things could change in the next couple of hours. But it doesn't seem like that's the case. I'm going to talk about the Astros versus the Cubs coming up a little bit with Ben Reiter. I'll explain when we get there. So we talked about the Alex Rodriguez thing. Him talking about you, Darvish. Darvish's agent was not happy about what A-Rod had to say. Quote, if this story had come from a credible journalist, we might have shown more concern. Close quote. My BS detector went to 10 on that quote. Pick whoever you think is a credible journalist that covers baseball. Ken Rosenthal, Buster Olney, Tim Kirkjian, Bruce Levine. Pick whomever you want. Whomever you want. Let them have said the same thing that A-Rod said. And you know how quickly this guy would have called that person a hack? Come on. Incredible journalist. Kiss my... Okay, he then went on to say but it came from A-Rod, so we're paying it little attention. Yeah, that's why you're quoted like 18 times in this story. Wolf went on to say, I think it was classless and bordered on unprofessional to take a little nugget of somewhat exaggerated information from one person that maybe he had a history with and turning it into a spokesman for the entire team. Whoa, 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 whoa. In this quote, the agent is saying that somebody told A-Rod something. And Mike, am I reading that wrong?
No, you are not.
Let me read it again. I think he was classless and bordered on unprofessional to take a little nugget of somewhat exaggerated information from one person that maybe he had a history with. Is this guy outing the source? Let's play detective here for a second. Who on the Cubs has he had a history with? Didn't Chris Jimenez get DFA'd a little while ago? I know who told him. Cole Hamels. See, you can connect the dots. But the fact that the agent said that someone told Alex something means that he's not lying about that. He might be lying because he kind of lies, but that is a terrible statement by the agent. What are you doing? You're lending credence, Clearwater and Revival, to this. He goes on to say, Joe Maddon cleared that up afterwards, attacking a player who is injured and on the disabled list, which is difficult for any player, especially one who has a big contract in his first year with a new team. Imagine how difficult it is for Darvish, but then also attacking him for staying with the team. During A-Rod's absurd comments, the video shows that Darvish was right there on the top step of the dugout, cheering on his teammates, which is what you want from somebody like that. He wasn't hiding out in Mesa at the spring training complex or back home like A-Rod was when he was suspended. Ooh, burn! So here's my thing. What if someone would rather do their rehab in Mesa? Does that make them a bad guy? I don't think so. Burn. So there, hopefully we gave you enough so that you can make up your own mind on this. Give you a little bit of my experience and some odd quotes from the agent. He basically told us that someone told A-Rod this. I'm going to read it one more time. Just to be sure, Mike, I'm going to read it one more time. I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it in the calm voice, okay? I think it was classless and bordered on unprofessional to take a little nugget of somewhat exaggerated information from one person that maybe he had a history with and turning that into a spokesperson for the entire team. So now I know that the person's on the team. Yes, Herbie?
I'm trying to think of a person that played with A-Rod or might have a history.
Was Jimenez in Texas when A-Rod was there? Is he that old?
I don't think he's that old. I'm trying to think of former Yankees.
Did Cole Hamels and A-Rod play together at some point?
I mean, the only player that I think played maybe at the same time and then maybe in the same division as A-Rod is John Lester.
No. Ben Zobrist.
Oh, yeah. There you go. But
they're
that
like
guy,
the same age. Yeah. He's, no, Ben Zobrist not.
But that guy, no.
No, Ben Zobrist is like, leave me alone. I'm just here to play ball and wear these black shoes.
Maybe it was John Lackey.
I got a long memory. Hey, he said it. He said he's got a long memory. Maybe he remembers something about you, Darvish. I don't know. We'll talk baseball with Ben Ryder next here on The Score. We are going to do some White Sox talk at 9 o'clock. Bottom of the hour is being brought to you by Subway. Show them your app and wet your whistle during Free Drink Fridays. Just head to Subway restaurants every Friday and show them your Subway app for your 21-ounce drink. Limited time, only at participating restaurants. No additional discounts or coupons can be applied. We have something to give out. I'm going to give something away here. If you're caller 6 to the Scores contest line, 312-591-6700, we're going to give you a pair of tickets to see the Kenny Wayne Shepherd Band on Friday, August 24th at Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo. Tickets are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape. I love going to Four Winds. Have a good time there. You run into a Matt Spiegel there occasionally. He's just like hanging out. He's not even gambling. Just like greeting you at the door. Like, hey, how's it going? I'm Matt Spiegel. Bringing on Ben Ryder now. Ben Ryder works for Sports Illustrated. He has a new book called Astro Ball, and I thought that it might be a good idea to bring him on and talk about the book. Oh, by the way, Ben is the guy that wrote the story in Sports Illustrated where the Astros were on the cover saying that they would win the 2017 World Series back in 2014. So glad to have Ben on the show. Ben, thanks for joining me. I want to start with, obviously, this is another one of those teams that uses numbers to their advantage. What's the way that the Astros were able to do that?
Now, after spending a couple days embedded in their front office, I came away thinking that they had come upon a new way to try to win, one that wasn't based only on stats, although certainly their analytics department was very advanced, but that had brought in another source of information that had been overlooked recently: humans, human gut, human experience, human observation, and had figured out a way, or at least to attempt to figure out a way, to combine the two to get the best out of both man and machine. So really, ever since those days, deep inside the Houston Astros front office, I thought this is a story worth following. Of course, the prediction that they put on the Sports Illustrated cover brought it to a whole new level.
It's funny because that's the proper evolution, right? Where we had all of this stuff going on where people going, no, we now know how to quantify everything that happens on a baseball diamond, yet there's still a human element to the game. I felt like that was kind of the next logical step for the game to learn how to marry the two schools.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And that was really the Astros' stroke of genius. For a long time, for 15 years, ever since Moneyball came out in 2003, the pendulum had swung very far away from humans and towards the numbers, towards analytics. Who needs flawed, fallible human observation when the numbers can tell you everything you need to know? The Astros' real genius was to realize that there are many factors in winning that can't be quantified, even by the most advanced analysts you have. You know, you're lost in sports and in a lot of industries these days if you don't respect the numbers, if you don't have a handle on the data. But the way to get an edge now is to go back to those softer sources of information, which can only be perceived by human beings.
Talking with Ben Ryder, the name of his book is Astro Ball, The New Way to Win It All. We're discussing a little bit of what's going on in the world of Major League Baseball. Stuff that people can find in the book. What's the most interesting thing to you? I mean, I know you're writing an entire book, but what's the thing that you said, oh, wow, I had no idea that that's what they were doing and how they were doing it?
Well, you know, there's a whole lot in the book, and I really take readers deep inside, not just the clubhouse, but the front office, particularly the nerd cave, which is the office that their analysts that's what the analysts have called the office in which they work. But in reporting the book, and I've really been reporting it for 4+ years now before writing it, one thing that really surprised me was the role of somebody who did not do much of anything on the field in the World Series. In fact, he didn't have a hit. That's Carlos Beltran. You know, he was a bit disappointing as a 40-year-old as far as power and production on the field. But as I write in the book, he did all sorts of very specific things to help this young team get over the hump to ultimately beat the Dodgers. And that was another part of the Astros' brilliance. You cannot quantify something like team chemistry or leadership provided by a veteran like Carlos Beltran. But Jeff Luhnow, the GM, knew that his team needed that anyway, spent $16 million on Carlos Beltran, and there's no way he'd want a dollar of that back.
It's funny because that is one of those things that we try desperately to quantify of veteran leadership, someone who's good inside the clubhouse. Since there are no real numbers to it, what did the Astros say was the effect of Beltran in that clubhouse with younger players?
Right. Well, look, I mean, this being Chicago, this is certainly something that Theo Epstein recognizes, too. Everybody knows the major role that somebody like David Ross had on the World Championship team, even though, you know, David Ross isn't liable to hit too many home runs or anything like that. But really, it comes down to Beltran sitting down with Carlos Correa, teaching him how to break down every opposing pitcher pitch by pitch. A coach could do that, but it's another thing for a player with the track record of Carlos Beltran to do that. Correa told me that he attributes 7 of his 24 home runs last year to Beltran's influence alone. Also, things like bridging the gap in the clubhouse between Spanish-speaking players and English-speaking players. That's something that Carlos Beltran, who came into pro ball not speaking a word of English, worked his whole career to do. And, you know, if there was a certain cohesiveness and relentlessness that you couldn't quantify to the Astros last year, that's certainly a major reason why.
I heard that he was the impetus for the rule change in Major League Baseball, that there had to be a translator inside the clubhouse. Is that true?
That's right. Yeah, he was one of the driving forces. You know, when he was with the Yankees, he couldn't help but notice they had a bunch of Japanese players in there, Ichiro, Masahiro Tanaka, a couple others. They each had a personal translator. And yet, after every speech that Joe Girardi gave, a lot of the Spanish-speaking players who hadn't yet mastered English would rush over to Beltran to try to figure out what the manager had said. That was not something that he thought should stand. So he did take the lead, really, in forcing Major League Baseball and the teams to hire Spanish translators. His impact on the game is really, really strong. And, you know, talk to anybody. If there's one guy who's going to be a top managerial candidate this coming winter for whatever open jobs there might be, it's certainly going to be him.
Ben, you brought up the Cubs. I think there are a lot of Cubs fans that are sitting around looking at the Astros this year and going, well, wait, I thought they're supposed to be a World Series hangover. Well, what have the people in Houston said about how their team was able to win the World Series, seemingly celebrate and get all the same opportunities that the Cubs got in a market that's close to the same size as Chicago is, and not have this kind of hangover where they don't look like themselves at the beginning of the season?
Well, they've certainly hit a bit of a rough patch recently, dropping a 3-game set to the lowly Rangers. I think there might be a few answers to that question. One is they're just flat out better this year than last year. I mean, this time last year, they did not have the guys who are now their number one and number two starters in Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole. So certainly adding, you know, at the deadline last year and over the offseason has helped. Another thing is, look, this is an extremely disciplined, future-oriented organization. They didn't go through the torture they went through for all those years for a one-time shot at a title. That's why, you know, Jeff Luhnow is accused often of holding on to his prospects with too tight a grip. That's why he does it. He wants to continually be able to restock and reload every single year and not sacrifice his future too much, although, of course, he will for somebody like Justin Verlander. He doesn't want to kind of take from Peter to pay Paul.
I was working at a national network back in 2014. I was working at 120 Sports, which was one of the sister properties of Sports Illustrated. So we used to have you on, and it was great. And I remember when the issue came out with the Astros on the cover winning the 2017 World Series. And I kept wondering then, I don't know if I ever asked you, but I kept wondering, what was the reaction that you got when that story ended up on the front cover of Sports Illustrated?
I don't know what the best word is to use. Hate, opprobrium, skepticism. There are a lot of people out there who thought that we were just trying to stir the pot, throw a hot take out there that we didn't really believe in this. Well, I wrote a 5,000-word story supporting that cover. And you know what? Those things quickly turned around by the next year, 2015, when all of a sudden the worst team anybody had ever seen made the ALDS. So, look, I had nothing to do with this championship. Maybe I saw it a little bit earlier than most people. All the credit certainly goes to the players and the front office. But I experienced a little bit of the hate that they had for so long.
Well, that leads me to this. How much did you celebrate when they won? Because look, media people, we love to be right. When we make a prediction, especially one as bold as that one, 3 years out, how much did you celebrate when the final out was recorded?
I was busy reporting down on the field. Like, maybe I smiled here and there, and they did me a favor, I guess. they did me a favor by going up 5-0 in the second inning of Game 7, so it was kind of an easy coast towards the title. But look, I mean, it was a blessing and a curse. I knew I had my work cut out for me. As soon as Jose Altuve threw to Yuli Gurriel for that final out, I knew it was go time for this book, Astro Ball, which is now in bookshelves now. So I was certainly more forward future focused than looking back at what had just happened.
Ben Ryder is the writer of Astro Ball, A New Way to Win It All. You should go pick it up. The hardcover is out now. You can also get the Kindle copy as well. Why are we as baseball fans so fascinated with the inner workings of a baseball team? Because we saw this with Tom Verducci's book after the Cubs won the World Series. What about it intrigues the baseball fan?
Well, I think it's a look behind the curtain. You know, we see obviously what happens on the field, and it's dissected to fine degrees every single night. It's relatively rare when we see how all of that came to be, especially in an age when front offices are populated by so many brilliant people who are bringing in so many strategies that are really can be applied to all sorts of industries, you know, politics, healthcare, government, technology, business, even your personal lives. I think the chance to see what these brilliant guys are up to is one that I'm always excited by, and I was certainly excited to write about it in this book.
We're trying to figure out here in Chicago, how much do managers matter? And I know that this is something that goes on in baseball circles as writers talk about it with front office people and fans and players. I feel like Joe Maddon, his superpower as a manager is his ability to handle the room, to set tone. And that might change. The way that he sets tone might end up changing over the next couple of years. But I think that that's his superpower. So how do you end up putting a value on that? And am I off base that that's his superpower?
No, I think it is his superpower. And that's one of the things that AJ Hinch is so good at, too. I mean, I think one of the misconceptions about the Astros in particular is that essentially the front office is running the team by computer, setting the lineups, you know, dictating strategy. I found as I was reporting this book and through my reporting over the last several years, that's not true at all. In fact, when Jeff Luna was interviewing 10 managers to replace Bo Porter a couple years ago, he asked them all the same question. He said, I'm going to send down the lineup from my office every day. Are you okay with that? A lot of them said, yeah, you know, we're in a data-driven age. This is a data-driven organization. That's fine. That was the wrong answer. And A.J. Hinch was one of them who said, no. The fact is that manager is the centerpiece of the organization in a lot of ways. He's the filter between the front office and the clubhouse, from the clubhouse to the front office. He has to have an understanding of the data, but it's up to him to have the authority to apply it to his team. Only he knows the conditions on the ground, whose elbow hurts, who had a fight with his girlfriend, who's feeling a little under the weather that day. The ultimate call is his. And Jeff Luna is very clear that for the organization to work, it has to be.
You have a much clearer view because you're removed from the situation here in Chicago, even though you cover Major League Baseball. But I'd love to know what you think of what the Cubs have done, considering that Chris Bryant has been in and out of the lineup with a shoulder injury. The Yu Darvish deal hasn't worked out yet. Tyler Chatwood hasn't worked out yet. Anthony Rizzo hasn't quite been himself for most of the year. And yet here the Cubs are after, you know, 105 games played in first place in the National League Central with a Brewers team that seemed destined to overtake them.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it speaks to the quality of the club and the quality of organization that with all of those things going wrong, here they are still in first place in the NL Central, even though they haven't seemed to kick it into gear yet. I guess the one concern you have going forward is there's going to be a lot of pressure on their developmental department and their scouting department to restock that farm system that Theo Epstein has certainly taken advantage of to fortify in the past several years. But look, now you don't have a Gleyber Torres there. Now you don't have a Eloy Jimenez. Several guys that might be able to help this team going forward are no longer in Chicago. That might be one difference between the Astros and the Cubs. The Astros simply do not trade their top prospects And I don't think it's going to happen unless they're really blown away by some deal here in the near future.
What do you think we only have a few more hours before the trade deadline, but do you think the Cubs will do anything else? And if not, what might they need to do?
Well, I mean, I think you're certainly looking at the pitching staff, whether you're building it from the front, trying to kind of make up for what you haven't gotten from Darvish and Chatwood in particular, or, from the back, trying to shorten games that way. Probably the latter is more likely. The bullpen's been very good, but you can never have too many quality relievers. And it does seem like, as the clock ticks down, there might be something that's pretty rare, which is a surplus of relievers on the market. So if anything, I'd expect Theo to look there.
What's the next thing that you want to work on from a long-form book standpoint? Or is it, I'm just going to cover the end of this baseball season and take a long break?
Probably more of the latter. Writing a book like this in a single winter took a lot of energy and mental space for sure. So I'm just going to kind of sit back, probably not make any more predictions, and see what happens, and hopefully something else will develop.
Well, that's a great point. Like, I feel like you had a drop the mic moment. It's almost more dangerous for you to make predictions from here on out.
That's what a lot of people have told me, but I did something stupid, which is on November 1st last year. I predicted that night, maybe I was feeling myself a little bit, that the Astros would repeat this year. So I've got another one hanging over me coming up. Of course, if anybody can do it, Astros as they're constructed are certainly a threat to.
Well, I can tell you this much. The people here in Chicago are going to hate you if you were right about this prediction, Ben. But I still suggest that they go and pick up your book because you do tremendous work for Sports Illustrated. And I'm glad that you're getting the opportunity to write something like this that's a labor of love. And I'm sure that it turned out well. Thanks so much for joining me. I truly appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Nice to talk to you again.
The name of the book is Astro Ball. The writer is Ben Ryder of Sports Illustrated. Take a break. Nothing but White Sox talk next here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.